My name is Dr. Lindsay Weisner. I'm a psychologist, author, a mom, and still an occasional shit show. You're listening to the Neurotic Nourishment Podcast. This is a place for smart, sweary women to talk about stuff that matters, stuff that can make us uncomfortable, but stuff that helps us to learn and grow and be okay with living in that discomfort of not knowing the right thing to say or do all the time. Thanks for listening. You can also find me on Instagram at PsychShrinkMom or at Neurotic Nourishment. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 4, What Can You Live With? Or maybe it should be called, Who Can You Live With? In this episode, I talked to Dr. Alan Winder, psychologist and certified divorce and family mediator, about the state of relationships during the pandemic. How have things changed? How have we changed? Are there more people getting divorced? Are there more couples seeking therapy because of quarantine and corona anxiety? Have a listen as Dr. Winder tells us how to keep our marriages together and how to know when it's time to walk away. So I am here with Dr. Alan Winder, who in the time before was my office mate. I guess you still are technically my office mate, except only one of us goes to the office.
Hey, your name is still on the door, so that means you're my neighbor.
That is true. I am your neighbor. And it's nice to know that you go there because if my mailbox ever starts overflowing, I hope you let me know. My husband basically goes once every month or so to get checks, and we kind of stopped paying rent. So, you know, but you told me it's easy, and so I will figure out how to do it.
Okay, I didn't know that was an option, but it's good to know.
Apparently it is. But I would never do that. Our landlord is fine. 2 years ago, I would have said very nice. He's just another human being struggling to get by right now, like the rest of us. And I know a lot of people have left the space because he's very eager for referrals and has told me there's like a referral reward fee, which if I could only find enough people, maybe it would excuse my not paying rent. But I will pay rent. I'm not a horrible person, I promise. Alan, Dr. Winder, I can't decide. I'll probably resort to Alan, but it's not a disrespect thing. You are in a unique position because you are both a psychologist and also you have a specialty certification in divorce and family mediation, correct?
Yep, that is correct.
So, not that I'm talking about me, but some people's marriages seem to be suffering during the pandemic. For example, one husband this morning left for work and said to his wife, "So what do you have on your schedule today? What time do you get to eat bonbons?" And I thought, wow, no bonbons for me, mostly just making sure our children, who are full remote learners, have their cameras turned on and seeing patients and keeping them from killing themselves. And well, today it's podcasting and writing and the 8,000 other occupations, hustles I have taken up during the pandemic. But the point is, I'm not the only one because my husband goes into an inpatient facility and he's been wearing the same P95 mask for 3 weeks because they are, you know, more expensive, and he's going through all those struggles that we heard about that we thought were going to be gone. And it is tough to be married right now, I think. Tough to be single as well, but you know.
Definitely can be. Like you said, I'm sure your example is very theoretical.
Yeah, totally theoretical.
Yeah, listen, this is a crazy time and everything is different, and things that were hard before are even harder now. So, in your situation where someone's staying home, staying home is it sounds like a fun, easy thing to do. But especially where there are so many pressures, like you said, there are kids to watch and say the same agenda that you have when you're out, and now you need to do it when you're home. That actually can be harder in a lot of ways. And, when people who, one thing I think this whole situation has created is a very, very strong sense of different types of people and different classes of people, and people who stay home versus people who go out is certainly one of them. And it's not versus as in these are opposing groups, but it's something that
It
just didn't
feels like
exist
it's
before.
right. It also feels like it's versus sometimes.
Well, it can in the case of a marriage, it can be, not necessarily adversarial. But yeah, like you said, if one person is going out and kind of sees that as harder, and they feel like they're working harder, and the person who's staying in feels like they're working just as hard or harder, yeah, then that can create conflict.
Sure. I mean, we're talking about, on a marital level. There's also just the people who think the pandemic is over and the people who don't. Fine.
Yeah, that's another one. The last year or two has just created a lot of divisions between people, where people who previously probably saw themselves as similar were not necessarily significantly different, now do see themselves as different and even possibly against the people who believe differently.
Sure. Our local, I know you live in a different area than where we work, but our local Facebook page used to be went through a really volatile time, and then basically the woman who was in charge quit. She walked away after like I don't know how many years of it, and 'cause she got tired of. And then the new one that's popped out is like monitored by like eight different people, and they're it's very like, let's not be a-holes, and so it's mostly plumber recommendations now.
Yeah, exactly. And Facebook is the one social media that I use a lot. And yeah, there's nowhere that this division is clearer than social media, where especially in these groups, which Facebook has definitely become all about the groups. It's almost impossible to find a group of any kind, no matter how innocent the subject might be, that doesn't devolve into people yelling at each other. And that's something that, wouldn't have happened even a year ago, but now it's just the norm.
Well, I mean, you were the one who initially turned me on to the therapist Facebook groups, and then you left, and I, at the time, signed up for like 50 of them, and now it's just a place to go when I want to feel good about myself for my sanity, because there's a lot of people writing a lot of crazy things.
I had to leave most of the, I think I'm a member of one or two that are just focused on kind of practice building. But anything clinical or self-care related,
I don't want to hear
again,
about
just.
your fucking self-care. Like, I don't want to hear you went for a 6-hour walk with your dog on the beach before you started seeing patients because you clearly don't have children, don't have pressures, don't have, and
Yeah.
I don't think you should be wearing slippers in session, but
Well, these days, as long as you wear pants, I think it's pretty much all you could expect.
Well, my trick is the scarf trick, where you don't know what I'm wearing from the waist down, but a scarf makes me look fancy. And every time I put on a
Exactly.
scarf, my kids fall for it. They're like, "You're going out?" It was like, "Have I ever?"
What's going out?
Yeah, like once every 3 weeks, I go to get my eyebrows waxed. Thanks very much. Like that's pretty much it. Have you gotten the vaccine?
I have not.
Do you plan on it?
I don't know. I don't feel the personal clinical necessity of it. Like I'm not. I don't feel like I'm at risk or in a high risk category in this situation. We need to see what the world turns into. If it becomes something that's almost mandatory to get around, then I would certainly,
Sure.
do what I got to do. But I think that the vaccine is certainly important for the people who are in the high-risk categories of any kind.
Don't worry, I'm not going to attack you for not getting a vaccine. I was just curious.
I didn't think you would.
Yeah, no, it's curious to me, but you are seeing some in-person patients.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody who requests it.
Gotcha. See, that for me would be a reason too. But my husband also works at an inpatient facility where there's constantly outbreaks, and I am a worst case scenario kind of gal.
You know, I think the seeing patients in person, you know, like if people would be calling and saying, you know, I'd like to come see you in person, are you vaccinated? And then when I say no, they say, okay, forget it. You know, if I was getting a significant amount of calls like that, then that would become a motivation. But I haven't gotten any calls like that. So
you know, I was more worried about your health. I mean, that sounds selfish, but I was more worried about your exposure. I was going to say, has anyone asked you if you're vaccinated?
Nope, literally no one. You know, obviously people who come in, we follow protocols, sort of 10 feet apart, masks and all that, open windows, ventilation, cleaning after patients. But no one has asked me if I'm vaccinated.
Yeah, no, it would be a strange thing. I mean, I picked up probably about 10 new patients during the pandemic. And so we've only seen each other virtually. And so far it hasn't been an issue, which I think is what would drive me back in right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. If things are working well, you know, it's in a way, and seeing patients virtually is better. It's easier. It's just easier to schedule, and people can do it from anywhere. So it opens up a whole vast population that couldn't see you otherwise. And I know a lot of therapists who have transitioned completely to online and have no plans to ever go back. And I think that's great. You know, people who found a niche that they just want to keep doing. I think it's a great thing. Personally, I think I would like to keep a mix. I was offering online therapy for the last 3 years already. So I was already all set up for this. But it just has become a much larger percentage of what I do. And I think I would like to keep it as, you know, at least half of what I do going forward, because it just offers a level of flexibility that's, you know, can't be beat.
Yeah, 100%. I, you know, my kids have been full remote learners. I can't make the words come out of my mouth, but I think I'm sending them back in April, which is the next time our school district allows us to switch their learning status. And as I'm thinking about it, it's going to be a pain in the butt because, you know, either dropping them off or picking them up or meeting them at the bus stop or whatever it is, you know, it's, there has been a freedom in this. But I have one patient who I do still see in person. In this warmer month, she was coming to the house and we would sit outside. And then I have one patient who just doesn't like video because she spends her whole day on video. So we just talk on the phone, which is also fine. That's when I get to eat my lunch and she knows it. So,
yeah, that's another interesting point. I actually prefer phone to video. I think a lot of times the video, especially with, it's really very specific kinds of patients, but I think sometimes the video can get in the way and is not really, doesn't really add anything. Sure. And I find that phone sessions can very often be more useful. So I like doing them. I do some of them too.
That's interesting. I think there's some I would never do. This is a very unique case. There are some people that I don't think I would feel comfortable. I mean, we used to, obviously, like, I had surgery a couple of years ago, and so I did phone sessions. But in general, especially because I'm working with a higher level and higher amount of suicidal patients, I feel like I need to see your face now. But what I really want to know is what's going on, because many people have asked me this, and as long as they ask personally and professionally, and once they ask me the question, I know they're not happy right now with their marriage. But you know, they've been like, so has there been an uptick in, you know, divorce and separation? And you know, I don't know the official answer. I know people are having less babies, which doesn't bode well, but, you know, but so you tell me, what's life like on that? You know, you have the inside scoop. We want to know.
Yeah. So I don't have data either. Like I don't know the percentages, rates have gone up. I do know that of all the cases that, that I see, there is at least half, probably more, that the pandemic and the current world situation plays a factor. Whether that's something that has exacerbated previous issues or that has just made things unbearable for various reasons, or that's had new issues come up because of it, it plays a role, and there's no way around that. And I think that's just the reality going forward, that the state of the world is going to play a big role in people's relationships, both on the way in and on the way out. And it's made my work, I don't want to say more challenging, but it's added another dimension that makes it more difficult to help people get through things in a peaceful way, which is what I try to focus on doing. You know, one aspect, for example, of mediation is helping people to separate. And, you know, if a couple's living together and they want to separate, I'm helping them negotiate how, you know, who's going to leave and when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, and making sure that that doesn't affect the settlement and all that kind of stuff. You know, people's limited mobility and the inability to find new places and just the limits on the practical aspect of it just make it more difficult to negotiate. Like you say, okay, you're going to leave by a certain date, but you know, that might not be possible. And people who stay together, who don't want to be together, are in a very high conflict situation. And that just decreases their chances of having a peaceful outcome.
Right. So have you noticed like an increase in people, in new patients, or just a deterioration of existing relationships, or both?
Well, my caseload has stayed fairly stable. Like I said, it's switched a lot from, like a large portion has switched from in-person to virtual. But I haven't gotten a higher level of people calling than previously. It's just been about different things. And it's been about things that that probably wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have got calls about a year or two ago. And the word, you know, corona or pandemic is almost always part of that first phone call, because it's almost always a reason that the person is calling, whether that's the actual reason or it's just made things worse in their depression, anxiety, relationship, or whatever else.
Wait, so, but I imagine if they're calling, you mean like a first phone call?
Yeah.
So that to me would imply that, like you're saying, there hasn't been a significant uptick, but the ones that have come in are largely coming in with issues related to or exacerbated by the pandemic.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gotcha.
You know, in my actual psychotherapy work, I do a lot of CBT and solution focused work with anxiety, and that aspect of the practice has been almost exclusively related to COVID. People having increased anxiety or exacerbated anxiety. I've gotten a lot of old patients who I discharged years ago. I have one out this afternoon who the last time I saw him was, I don't know, 4 years ago. And he sent me emails in the interim, you know, just kind of touching base and telling me he's doing well, but he's coming back today because he needs to, you know, get tuned up. That was his email. He needs a tune up. People's coping strategies and ability to deal with anxiety, general stress, depression, they're just the same coping strategies that may have worked in the past just don't work anymore. And that's why people need to, you know, come in and figure it out again.
Right. And so are you getting repeat couples as well? Or do your couples, when you terminate with like couples, is it usually because the mediation is resolved?
Well, I see couples both for actual counseling, for couples counseling, as well as for mediation, whether it's a kind of, you know, full start to finish separation, divorce mediation, or just kind of helping them manage some aspects of their relationship during the separation, you know, parenting practice, you know, communication training. So in terms of couples, I don't typically see much repeat. Like if I terminate a couple, you know, I probably will not see them again as a couple.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah, you know, because either the therapy, like if they came for therapy, then either the therapy was successful and they kind of have moved forward, or it was unsuccessful, in which case they either, you know, found another therapist or got divorced or whatever, but it just lose track of them. And mediations are not repeat business,
right?
Meaning, like, once a mediation is done, the only repeat and the only kind of coming back of that couple is if something comes up down the line, which does happen. You know, new questions come up, new conflicts come up, and then they might come back for another session, you know, session or two to resolve the new thing, new question, you know, as kids get social questions or whatever. But other than that, it's very different than psychotherapy, where someone might come in and, you know, be there for months and then come back a year later. That's just not the way mediation is.
Sure.
And yeah. It's not supposed to be that way. It's really meant to be a very time limited and terminating process.
Sure. I mean, I have patients I've been seeing on and off for like 15 years, you know. And I enjoy that, you know. I enjoy watching them grow up, and, you know, and it's to whatever extent that means, you know, from the 22-year-old that thinks they're grown and then comes back at, you know, 30, ready to settle down. So, but I guess, you know, I'm really fascinated by the couples you see. Right before the pandemic, a couple came to me. And they were awful. And they're the only people I've ever been like, you should not get married. They were engaged. And I did what we're not supposed to do as therapists. And I just told them point blank, like, you should not get married. He is emotionally abusive. He has potential to be physically abusive. And yeah, they got married during the pandemic and then came back to me. Not much has changed. But for them, I think some of the things that they used to fight about are gone now, because like her getting a job isn't as easy of a thing since, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, not many jobs. I mean, I guess she could drive for Grubhub or something, but mm-hmm. You know, that's not the first thing an upper middle class couple is, you know, seeking to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess I'm wondering, so what do you have any advice for any listeners out there whose marriage is struggling during this pandemic?
Well, the advice is to call Dr. Lindsay and she'll fix you up.
Right, or call Dr. Lindsay, obviously. But no, but like solid, you know, skills or things that you've seen work with other couples who are having more difficulty during the pandemic.
Yeah, so it's a very case by case, you know, answer. You know, there's no one thing that you can do to fix everybody's problems. I actually just put up a article on my blog about this with a couple of different. It's on my website. My website is drwinder.com, drwinder.com, and okay. My blog is there. And sometimes I even write things in it every 6 months or so.
So can you give us a couple hints so that we can then send people to your blog to see the rest?
Yeah, you know, the general principle that I think is very useful is to not think that the same strategies and the same things that have worked before are going to work now. So like you said, you know, that couple that had certain fights before and now is having different fights, but might be approaching those new fights the same way that they approached the old fights, which clearly was not working. So in a way, it's an opportunity to kind of try something new and recognize what was not working before. And that's really a big focus of all of my work. all of my work is very solution focused, meaning that I start from the end of where you'd like to be, you know, whether that's individual or couples. And we work backwards, basically identifying what needs to happen to get to that point and developing a checklist of skills to develop to make that happen, and making that process into a actual project that can be followed and built on in a understandable and easy to follow way.
So can you give us a tangible example of how, you know, of how that might translate into real life?
For a couple?
Yes.
Let me think about that, and I'll try to answer in a few minutes.
Sure.
Because I can't think of one off.
That's okay.
Actually, I just thought of one.
Right.
There's one couple who I'm currently seeing that there's a kind of running fight between them about it's a second marriage for one of them. And that person has children from a previous marriage. And one of those kids is a source of friction in their marriage. The other partner just has trouble relating and understanding the parent's perspective and feels like this kid is causing stress in the relationship. And it's been an ongoing fight for the last 20 years, which has pretty much been that their entire relationship. And it's been an unresolved fight. It's one that they just have constantly and has been a constant drain on their marriage. And one of the things that has brought them repeatedly to different counselors, and at this point they're seeing me. And what the pandemic has created is a situation where the entire relationship between the parent and the kid is different. The kid's issues are different. The kid's relation to their marriage is different. And everything is just not the same as it was. And that has allowed them to be receptive to seeing the situation differently and to trying different coping strategies, involving empathy, involving making checklists of acceptable behaviors and improving their communication with each other. But basically things that they would not have been open to for the last 20 years, but now at least, well, the other spouse was not open to it, but now that person is open to these exercises and has actually been doing them in a limited degree. So a conflict that's been going on for 20 years that is still the same conflict, but is now because of different things, because of the pandemic. It shifted this person's perspective, where they're now willing to think about it differently and they're willing to work on it. So in that strange way, this pandemic has actually improved their prognosis. From my point of view, I think that they have a chance to finally, not resolve, but come to terms about this issue. Sure. It's really more of a couples mediation question than a counseling question. But I think they could be on the same page, where in the past they just weren't able to do that.
So what I hear is that it sounds almost like the non-biological parent has gained empathy and perhaps become closer to this child from these forced constraints change in living habits.
That's exactly the case, and it's gotten to the point where this the non-biological parent, this child lives out of state, and is an adult, and the non-biological parent is volunteering to fly down there and help this person, and again, these are things that never would have been possible, but I think it's a great thing, and I think it's good for their ultimate outcome.
I mean, that's really wonderful. Listen, I do know that there are times when I sit and realize, like, I have, my children are 10 and 12, and like, no doubt I would not be, I would not have this much time with them. And yes, sometimes it's too much time, but also like, during the pandemic, like my husband has taught my daughter how to ride a bike, and she might have sort of known before, but not really. Or we go on more family bike rides, or, we're still managing, like there are special moments snuck in that I can value, and oh, it's nice to, so that's where my mind went.
Yeah, yeah. it's the kind of thing that you know, even the difficult moments, it's, you could almost predict that in 20 years when you're looking back, you're going to be saying, you know, yeah, that was a great time. We spent all that time together when your kids are living, you know, who knows where, and you never see them. That's right. I think it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, I also think the parent that works outside of the home is more likely to view it in such black and white, only because HIPAA doesn't really exist now. Like, my son will call out "love you" before he goes to school, unless he's decided I'm a piece of garbage that day, unless he's told us nothing. You know, and my daughter, I asked her to heat up my coffee before our thing, because she had a break. And so, you know, that's great. They learned to use a coffee maker. So valuable skills, I think. So I think that's a great one. So in some ways, the pandemic, if we choose to look at it that way, has given marriages a different sort of framework or paradigm through which to view old problems.
Oh, definitely. That's the positive aspect of it, if you will.
So something that I hear a lot from my patients is that I'm thinking which way to go. The two people with different levels of anxiety, is a difficult thing for each person to relate to. And so I'm wondering, you know, have you come across that? And even if you haven't, like, how would you, or how should we attempt to work through that in our marriages as a listener?
It's something that, yes, I come across constantly, both in my personal life, you know, and just knowing people, and in my clinical work. When two members of a couple see things differently, it's when I see a couple like that, I consider that to be couples mediation more than couples counseling, probably, unless it's skill building. If it requires skill building and improved ability to communicate, then it's more counseling.
Okay.
If it's a marriage that was previously successful and doing well, and this is just a localized issue, then it's more couples mediation. But the bottom line is that, when people see things in a fundamentally incompatible way, it's something that might not have a resolvable outcome. You know, like when a couple decides to be together or gets married, so everything is kind of on the table at that moment, where if there aren't any differences, they should be aware of them, and they should have at that point either negotiated them or have an understanding of what the reality is going to be. And so there's sort of a baseline set at that point that everything else is measured off of.
How is that even remotely possible? I mean, I met my husband at 23, married at 28, and he's 5 years older than me. I can assure you there was a world of things I never even considered my perspective on, you know?
Right. And things that are not, you know, in the reality or in anybody's consciousness at that point might need to be discussed, you know, when they come up or when someone thinks of them. But I mean, in terms of just the reality of daily life, you know, when a couple gets married, you know, there's a certain routine, a certain set of expectations, a certain just understanding of what reality is like. And, you know, if someone wants to deviate from that, you know, then they're the ones who need to make the case of why that should happen.
Can you flesh that out with an example? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, just in a very broad level, you know, if a couple agrees that they're going to, you know, live in New York, for example, and that's kind of the reality, and they start their marriage doing that. And then one person says, you know, I don't like it here. I want to move to Australia. It's not an invalid position, but that person's going to kind of have to make the case for why the reality should change from the agreed upon baseline.
Right.
And when new things come up, then things need to be negotiated. You know, if a couple has a certain financial status and that changes, and now there are new questions or decisions that need to be made. So those, again, they're new things that need to be discussed and negotiated, but with a good relationship where there's certain, with this good communication, there's at least a framework of how those questions are going to be handled and how that decision is going to be made. It's not necessarily something that's been discussed or fleshed out or has a very clear path, but communication is a skill and it's something that's either going well and has certain established parameters or doesn't. And again, that's kind of a new reality when a couple needs to deal with something new and figure it out together. This world situation of the whole pandemic and anxiety is something that falls sort of into that category, but even in a larger sense, because it's a changed reality that affects everyone. It's not a localized event that affects just the couple, like if somebody loses a job or something. And what that does is it creates a certain external community that anyone who has any feeling can attach themselves to. And in that way, if there is conflict with their spouse, it's not just individual conflict, it's sort of joining a larger entity in that conflict, which can make it worse. And the bottom line is that, like I said, there is not necessarily a meeting of the minds that can happen, because if people have opposing beliefs, that's not necessarily possible. If people have fairly similar beliefs and they can kind of find a comfortable middle area, that's doable, but those aren't typically cases that present for any kind of help. People who do have very differing views, the only real resolution is compromise, which sounds kind of simplistic and, ridiculous, but the question always becomes, what can everybody live with?
Right.
Which is really the bottom line of mediation. What is the worst case scenario that you can live with? And what is the worst case scenario that you can live with? And are those compatible? And the challenge is getting people to the point that they're willing and capable of identifying and disclosing what that worst case scenario is.
Right. And do you find that's a struggle?
Oh, it's a huge struggle, yeah.
Sure. No, it's a very good question as to what can you live with. I don't know how I feel about the agreed upon baseline, just because I think if you're the same person now than you are when you got married, then I feel like you've missed out on a lot of opportunity for growth.
Again, it's not a question of things being the exact same as they were when the person got married. But when people get married, there's a sort of snapshot of that is the agreed upon baseline. And a healthy marriage, a healthy relationship will grow based on that. And everything will be based on that. And yeah, of course, everybody's going to change and life is going to change. But every change is going to be communicated effectively about and agreed upon, of how the baseline is going to change.
So what sort of components do you think of when you're thinking of like what makes up the agreed upon baseline? Like mom will take care of the kids. I'm not going down a road, but it could be dad, whatever. Like, okay, so mom will be the breadwinner and dad will stay home and take care of the kids.
Right. That's one of a million. Yeah. Kind of parenting roles, family roles, who's going to do what? If that's the understanding, if a traditional, couple gets together and, dad goes to work and mom stays home and takes care of the kids.
Sure. I was just trying to make it gender specific.
Yeah, I know.
No one was like, why does a woman have to? Because that's not what we're saying. Yeah.
So, then again, that is their shared reality. That's what they agreed upon. And, it's not to say that there's anything wrong with the woman working. And if the wife decides in 10 years that she wants to get a job, that's fine. But in a healthy relationship, that's not something that's going to be a sudden, change that nobody saw coming.
Sure. Sure. It has to be a discussion that has to go from there. But you mentioned parenting. Which is so, what do you know about parenting before you have kids? I mean, honestly, like on a base level, the first thing that comes to mind, especially in the community we live slash work in, is like religion. You agree on what, how much, you know, what religion you're going to raise a child, how much religion, these certain rules, and move on. You know, humorously, my husband and I had lived together for like 3 years. Maybe it was 3 years, maybe four before we got married. But I remember when we were looking for, you know, registering for China, the most useless thing you'll ever do, consider. Right now, I think we should like start, you know, duck shooting, whatever those things are called, you know.
Skeet shooting, yeah.
Good shooting idea. By China, thank you. Because I've like used it maybe twice. It's beautiful, but whatever. And my husband pointed out that we need to get a second set of dishes for kosher. This is a man who loves bacon. This is a man who I'd live with for 3 years. And we ended up having a large fight because I was sort of like, what the heck are you talking about? Also because his family had one of these very interesting, I call it hypocritical. We keep kosher in the house, but not out. And don't worry, if you want a bacon cheeseburger, just eat it on a, or a cheeseburger, whatever, eat it on a paper plate. Right. And so I was like, are you kidding me? Like, why are we having this conversation now? And so I guess my point being, like, as you evolve this baseline, I don't think this baseline can stay the same.
Yeah, no, it definitely can't. And you know, that's what a healthy dynamic of a relationship is, where you can actually deal with those things that come up, and be able to, again, as long as they're not fundamentally incompatible. And if they were, then they probably should have been identified earlier.
Sure.
But if something comes up that couldn't have been predicted, you know, and I think COVID is a perfect example of that. It's something that could never have been thought about. Nobody's dating 5 years ago and discussing their views on, you know, virus replication. Yeah. But it's something that comes up that's not predictable, that could not have been resolved previously. But if the patterns of good communication are there, then those patterns will kick in and make it more likely to have a favorable outcome, as opposed to, you know, each person kind of taking their position and just having an adversarial, you know, view.
Sure. I mean, I think the most difficult and complicated thing is parenting, because I don't think you really know what all of your views are until you become a parent.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge one. And one thing that I actually recommend to couples who are, you know, considering getting married or talking about kids, to not just have conversations about parenting, but to learn more actively about it, you know, to, you know, take a course or read a book together and have discussions about it. And sometimes I do that in a session with couples, because I think it's a very important piece to try to at least make sure you're on the same planet about. You know, like you said, there's no way to be, you know, totally planned out about knowing how you're going to treat a teenager, because nobody knows how to treat a teenager.
Normally I make a joke about beating them, but I'm not going to make them.
Of course not. But you can at least, you know, make sure that you're on the same wavelength, and there are no gross incompatibilities, and that there's a mutual commitment to work together. Yeah. And that's kind of the goal on things that you can't really have a total resolution about.
I have one more question for you. I don't want to take up too much of your time. So it's sort of a roundabout question. There is a statistic that people who get divorced once are more likely to get divorced again. That being said, I was in the, I was getting my hair / eyebrows done a few months ago, some point during COVID, might've been September, who knows. And this, I love the guy who does my hair. And so he's very funny. And so, but this florist came in with this huge flower arrangement and said, oh, it was the receptionist's birthday today or yesterday, and those must be from her husband. And he said, that must be from her man. And I was like, well, it's not a husband, it's way too big for that, you know? And he goes, it's a second husband. And we both went, oh. And I have several friends that are on their second marriages, and my very sharp, witty, sarcastic, snarky, brilliant and gorgeous friend goes, yeah, he's a lot, like, they treat you a lot better because they figure they're a little scared. You walked away once, you might walk away again, you know, like, so there's these two conflicting, like statistics or what we see, you know? And so I guess I wondered if in your opinion, if there was any sort of pattern you noticed.
Yes, it's funny, and I've seen the statistics, and yes, people who go through a initial divorce are much more likely to go through a second, and when there's kids involved, it jacks the rate up, you know, more significantly. I mean, yeah. it's like a ridiculous percentage. And I'm not sure what the answer is, you know, if it's kind of become, you know, something that's possible to do, it's, you know, just not as scary or difficult as might have been imagined previously, or if it just each person sees that it is possible to exist after marriage, and that becomes something that's an option where previously it wasn't an option. And that second dynamic that you're talking about definitely does exist, where, of course, in a second marriage, people try to compensate for whatever was the problem in the first marriage, very often in unhealthy ways, unfortunately. But, you know, that is definitely a universal dynamic.
Wait, give me an example of what would be an unhealthy way to compensate.
Well, the kind of classic example is just kind of finding somebody who's the opposite of the person who he had the first time around, which might be very good in a lot of ways if those things are healthy attributes, but very often it'll ignore a whole second set of things that are just as problematic. It's very reactionary. It's not based on a even keeled assessment of what is best, but it's just kind of, well, I don't want that, so I want the opposite.
That makes sense. I guess I would hope that if you're older and more mature in a second marriage, you know more about this agreed upon baseline, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, ideally, if someone has become older and more mature, which, you know, and I know a lot of people who are older, but, you know, true. Maturity part. yeah, so and hopefully a second marriage based on, you know, more life wisdom and patience and all that will be more likely to succeed in those regards. But it still needs to be with the same sense of willingness to work through the difficult parts at the same level that the earlier marriage had. And maybe that's one of the reasons that it's just, you know, possible to walk away from it easier, less consequence.
Sure. I mean, my concern is always that often people who get divorced end up with the same asshole in a different body because they haven't done any of the work on their own personal growth, you know?
That certainly happens too. You know, there's a reason why people ended up with someone who's bad for them. There's always a reason. And if there's no work done, if people have no idea why that happened, then they're almost guaranteed to have that happen again.
Yeah. But on the upside, if it does, we can send them to you.
Oh yeah, that's definitely an upside.
I'm giving you a little pitch there. Alan, Dr. Winder, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm glad we set this up, and I think this is a really interesting topic. Tell everyone where they can find you.
Just go to my website, drwinder.com. It's drwinder.com. You could also search for me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm there, or at least my content is posted there. If you want to email me, just my contact info is on my website. Just shoot me an email, and I'm very responsive to emails. It's really a pleasure talking to you, to Lindsay and Dr. Thank Lindsay.
Dr. Lindsay. So you're seeing patients in the office and virtually as well.
Yeah, so my office is, you know, next to yours in
I know.
In Hewlett, I also have opened an office in central New Jersey in Highland Park near Edison, if anybody, you know, wants to come out there. And I do all my work through video as well. So
you're licensed for anybody. In both states, so you can see people in both states. Yep. And can you see people outside of the state?
So that's a whole mess now with COVID. You know, so it changes every month. Different states have different rules. The short answer is that most states do have some mechanism where you can at least get a temporary license to, which can be pretty easy, to see people through telehealth. And like I said, it's such a mess that I doubt anybody's really keeping track at this point. But
that is my thought as well. Yeah. Yeah,
it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, the whole psychology licensure thing is ridiculous, but that's for a different conversation.
I'm so mad. Now you're going to make us get continuing education credits? We don't have enough on our plate? Like,
oh God, this is terrible.
I know. Maybe I can count this podcast as a continuing education. Just kidding. I wouldn't do that. I totally would. But not. But I would only say that with the mic off. thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Neurotic Nourishment Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, shout from rooftops, smoke signals, hot air balloons, whatever. I'll take any of it. And if you really like what you're listening, why don't you become a patron? Join our Patreon. Visit us at patreon.com/neuroticnourishment. Thanks.